Hey folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 110 of the True Crime All the Time podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, how are you?
I'm doing all right, man.
I like it when you're doing all right.
Yeah, doing better than last week.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah, keeping my head afloat.
What about the rest of you? How you just the head?
Yeah, you know, I got to start somewhere.
The rest of you, you're totally fine to let that go dangle beneath the surface.
Let it dangle.
Let's start out wishing everyone a happy holiday, because I'm kind of afraid I'll forget at the end.
Yeah.
Let's just do it right up front.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to everybody, you know, regardless of what holiday you celebrate. And if there is no holiday that you celebrate,
well, happy laying on the couch, binging your favorite Netflix.
Or have fun with friends and family.
Or
and
listen to TCAT from the very, very, very beginning
or do that. Or do that.
110 episodes, they keep you busy.
But this is our last episode before Christmas.
Yeah.
And then we'll come back next week with a Patreon episode that we did for Patreon. That we're releasing on TCAT. That'll give Gibby and I the week of Christmas off.
Yeah.
But there'll be an episode of TCAT out for everyone.
So there you go. So how you doing, by the way?
You know, I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah.
It was a strange week for me. This was the week that I turned in my laptop.
Yeah.
I did that on Wednesday. So really, I woke up Thursday and it was my first day, essentially, in 20 some odd years that I'm technically not unemployed to the 28th, but it felt that way. I made my coffee and I came down and worked in the studio
all day. And you got your new office attire.
Yeah, sweatpants and a t-shirt.
Yeah, you actually went out and bought a couple pairs of sweatpants.
I bought new sweatpants
at Sam's Club.
Because I figured I would be staying home quite a bit more.
Yeah, you're very, very proud of your new sweatpants.
My $12 sweatpants.
Yeah.
I am a bargain shopper.
Yeah, I think you just like them because they have a little zipper on the side.
They got pockets and a zipper.
I don't know what you're going to put in all those pockets.
Hey.
But you're set. If you ever need pockets,
I got that.
You're the pocket man.
All right, let's do our Patreon shout outs. We had Laura Kajikob jumped out or up to our highest level.
Kajikob.
She's been a Patreon supporter.
So I got too shy to shy.
Mitch Lonis. And this one I got to talk about for a minute.
Yeah.
Mitch is a big fan of the show. His wife actually reached out to us and said, hey, I want to do something special for like a stocking stuffer. So what she did is she bought him a year's worth of Patreon.
Yeah, that's like the perfect gift.
It's awesome.
Jennifer was really thinking on that one.
But there was nothing that she could stick in the stocking that says, here, you're now a Patreon supporter. So Gibby, what you and I did is we wrote her an email, addressed it to Mitch, and just said, hey, man, you have an awesome wife. She did this for you.
Which was better than the alternative.
Which was what? You showing up at their house?
Yeah.
And saying, ta-da!
Ta-da!
In a skin-tight,
Elf on the Will Shelf
Ferrell
outfit?
Elf suit?
I would do it.
I know you would, and that's what scares me.
Yeah.
But I thought that was really cool. It's a neat story. He's going to get up sometime Tuesday. He's going to read this, and
it's going to be his best Christmas present ever.
And he's not going to know ahead of time because he's not caught up.
Yeah, he's only like, what, episode 80?
He's like on 80-something, she said. And he doesn't know he's a Patreon.
Yeah.
So he's not going to listen to our normal weekly Patreon.
Unless she's not good at keeping secrets.
Well, that's true.
She might be too excited and be like...
Either way, it's cool.
Yeah.
So we had Brendan McLaughlin.
Thank you, McLaughlin.
Kay Kraniski.
Kraniski.
Megan Smith.
Hey, Megan.
Samantha Olier.
Thank you, Samantha O.
Pat Harley jumped out at her highest level.
Oh, thank you.
Brandy Soleil.
Hey, thanks, Brandy.
Adam Sanders.
Hey, Adam Sanders.
Cat Cradle.
Cat Cradle. You know that's a band.
I know you think it is.
Or like a really cool poet.
Gibby and I always try to think of when we get something that's not quite a name, we try to figure out what it is.
Yeah.
Alexi Esikoff.
And Alexi Esikoff.
And then the next one is that way, Critical Onions.
Yeah, Critical Onions. That's like a...
You think that's a heavy metal band?
Yeah, a heavy metal band.
I think it's probably a podcast or something. Rachel Lang.
Thanks, Rachel.
Morgan. Hero the Pup.
Yeah, that's the alternative band.
You think that's a band, an alternative band. I think that's somebody got a new puppy. They named it Hero.
Yeah.
And they wanted the Patreon in their name.
Hero's name?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I think. Hero probably likes the intro music.
But the band is playing tomorrow night. But we'll go with that.
Hero the Pup.
Yeah.
Kathy Belbin.
Hey, Kathy.
Dustin Kelly.
Thanks, Dustin.
Sonia Blazina.
Blazina.
Just Diana.
Hey, Just Diana. That's all you need sometimes.
That one's for you. Lindsay Nading.
Hey, Lindsay.
Daniel Hardy.
Thanks, Daniel.
And Juliana Papaleges.
Papaleges.
And then if we go back into the vault, Gibbs.
Let's do it.
This week we selected Marcella Fletcher.
Marcella.
Long-time Patreon supporter.
Oh, we did appreciate it so very much.
We did. And we appreciate all the support we get. And we had some PayPal support as well.
Yeah.
Chris and Tanya Knitter.
Ooh, a
husband and wife team.
The team.
Yeah.
I like that.
Jennifer Warmuth.
You sure? Warmuth?
I think so.
Yeah.
Ted Perry.
Hey, good old Ted, man. Retired up there in Denver. Appreciate that.
Jennifer Murray.
Hey, Jennifer.
Karen Washington.
Ooh.
And Kira Enright.
Karen and Kira.
So appreciate all that support. Love it.
We do. Thank you so much.
Let's talk a little bit about Unsolved.
Yeah, let's do that.
The episode this week is on 18-year-old Brooklyn Farthing.
Yeah, down in Kentucky.
Down just south of Lexington,
yep.
Where I go to watch my Wildcats play.
Yeah.
And she disappeared in 2013.
She sure did, yeah.
And that's the episode. You know, what happened to Brooklyn? What was her background?
Some rabbit holes.
We'll get into theories and rabbit holes and all of that.
See where we can go with it.
All right, Gibbs, let's get into this True Crime All Time episode.
Let's
you ready?
It. Yeah, let's do that.
We're talking about Clifford Burns, and this is a true crime that occurs on Christmas Eve.
One of the worst times to have something happen,
it
for
is.
Sure.
Also back in 2013, same year. But as we like to do, let's talk a little bit about Clifford Burns' background. He was born in 1968 to James and Edith Burns, and the family lived in the town of Niskayuna, New York.
Niskayuna?
Yeah, it's upstate New York. Yeah. I'd never heard of it.
It's over there just on the other side of Syracuse?
You have no idea where it is.
It's where they got to rake their snow off their roofs because it's too much weight when they have the big snowfall. It could collapse your roof. So they have these snow rakes.
But that only happens in Niskayuna?
No.
You're talking about that happens in upstate New York.
Yeah. You know, over there by the, what's those, is it the Catskills Mountains?
I have no idea.
What's that called?
I know that's in New York, but.
Yeah. Did I say it right?
The Catskills?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm done.
I do know it's pretty close to the state capital of Albany. I don't know where Syracuse is in relation.
Yeah, it's all
to
up that way.
It's
as you
all,
as you push your way towards Toronto,
up that way,
where our friend Carrie lives, we got a good listener that's on social media, and she lives in Toronto. That's why I know it's got to be close to that.
Okay,
My geography is so
precise.
Mm-hmm. Ask me any state, I'll tell you the capital. Not now.
Not right now.
No,
because I'll go through all 50.
Yeah, let me pull up Google.
I'll go through all 50.
You know what? I think I could get most of them.
It won't be much of an episode, but
I don't know. Maybe we won't do that.
I'm pretty good with state capitals, but
it's like sixth grade. You learn that stuff, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
We have to talk about Clifford's childhood, though, Gibbs.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, you know, we're not talking about a serial killer here, right? We're talking about one incident. But again, this guy had a childhood that was, you know, less than ideal. His father, James, mistreated his wife, Cliff's mother, horribly. In 1982, he shot her in the chest while they were having an argument inside the family car.
Yeah.
Okay, so right now we have a problem with conflict resolution. You get in an argument with your wife. The only way that you know how to deal with it is pull out a handgun and shoot her in the chest.
This is how you solve it, son.
And you're foreshadowing because who's learning from that?
It's how we do it in our family.
Clifford Burns. I mean, you're talking about this, your wife, your partner, the mother of your children, and over an argument, you're going to shoot her in the chest. I guess I just don't get it. We do a lot of these episodes, Gibbs. I don't understand how guys in particular, because obviously we cover a lot of guys that do really bad things, let their emotions take over so much to the point that they would want to hurt the person they love. You know, whether it's murder or whether it's just, you know, whether it's domestic violence.
Just words, man. Verbal abuse.
Emotional.
Terrible. Yeah,
distress. Things like that. I just don't understand why men or how men can do that.
Now, I will say there's a lot of couples. They just like to fight, you know. I don't know why, but I mean, they like a good fight, and some people just can't back down either.
That's true. But I think I know what you're saying. There are some couples that fight. Maybe it's because of the makeup part is fun. And
yeah,
I don't know.
I think some of it, they just like to fight. You know, they're not happy. They fight and they're okay, you know, but they just.
I don't know anybody that has shot his wife in the chest over an argument.
No, maybe stabbed.
You know some people that have stabbed their wives?
Maybe, or maybe their wife stabbed them.
That's true. Wives are capable as well.
Yeah.
Now, it's also been reported that James threatened to shoot his wife just a few months after he already shot her.
So he shot her.
And then he threatened to, and not just threatened, he had the pistol, it was loaded, and he pointed it at her.
But she said, "I love you, baby. I am never going to leave you."
Now, I don't know about you, but I think if you've already been shot once, just a few months prior, and you live through that, the next time your spouse points a gun at you, that's DEFCON 5. Is that the highest?
Yeah.
It is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I was never in the military, but I've watched a lot of movies.
I'd be out.
I'm out of there.
Look.
Of course, I would like to say I would be out of there
prior
after
to?
I got shot in the chest or even prior to, but we know, and actually was in an email communication this week with a woman that wanted to kind of follow up on some domestic violence type issues that,
right,
that maybe we've talked about in the past, and how it is hard for some women to walk away.
Yeah, I think so. You know, a lot of that stuff comes with the mental abuse, you know, and making, you know, that other person feel less than they are, and they don't feel, they just don't feel they can get away, that they're trapped. And that's tough. That's a tough thing to live with.
It really is. But I think if you were shot in the chest and 3 months down the road, that same person, your partner,
wouldn't be partners anymore after I got shot in the chest,
points another gun at you, you know what this person is capable of. We've gone way past the point of threatening.
Yeah. I was reading an article the other day about another couple that had a big argument going through divorce. And the guy decided he threw acid on her.
Oh my God.
On her face, ruined her one eye. But while he was in prison, they wrote back and forth. He comes out. They decide to start dating, and then they get married again. And now they're supposedly happily married after that. But can you imagine? I mean, that's talking about forgiveness. There's no way. I don't know how you could do that.
I mean, every situation is different, but it's hard on from the outside looking in.
Yeah. But it'd be really tough if someone sat in a car and shot me to be like, I'll see you after I get out of the hospital. We'll be all right.
But in this case, Edith had enough, right? You shot me once. You're now threatening me with a gun again. So she leaves. She takes off. She takes Cliff and later files for divorce. Now we fast forward several years later to 1984. Divorce proceedings are, you know, underway. And actually, the day that James and Edith were scheduled to appear in court is when everything goes sideways again. They're not going to make it to court because James, Cliff's father, went to the house where Edith and Cliff were staying, living. He kidnapped her.
Yeah. If I can't have you, nobody's going to have you.
And the police are called. There's a standoff. He shoots a police officer and later shoots himself. Cliff Burns was 16 years old at this point. So you kind of go back and analyze these events, right? We're not talking a lot about his childhood, but I want to hit those highlights of, you know, there's no doubt, Gibbs, that this guy witnessed rage, anger, abuse from his father towards his mother. Like you mentioned, he's learning.
Sure.
This is how
conflict resolution 101. To deal
with your problems.
This is how dad did it.
And we're going to see a lot of those same exact issues from Cliff in dealing with those things in his life that he just can't handle, right? The rage and the anger, it builds up and eventually it gets the best of him and he handles it in the worst possible way.
Yeah. So I would say if you're listening to us and you were raised thinking that shooting, stabbing, beating was the answer to how to handle conflict with your spouse, it's not.
It is definitely not.
So work on that.
Now, later on, we're just going to gloss over some highlights in Cliff's life. He joined the Marines. He was married once, divorced. But I really want to pick up this story because we've got a lot to it here, Gibbs. When Cliff Burns met, then married his second wife, Patricia, in 1998. He was 31 at the time and she was 27. She brought into the marriage three children. And we have to talk about Patricia a little bit as well. You know, there's a lot of in the research about the fact that she had a history of bad previous relationships. And a lot of her partners battled drug and alcohol problems.
Which is rough.
It is rough.
Yeah.
It is rough. And we talked about it before. I just think she was a bad picker of men. Now, what her family has said is that she was a fixer, right? She thought, okay, these are good guys, but they're damaged.
Yeah.
I can fix them.
Yeah. I can make them better. Mm-hmm. I can do that. You know, what she didn't realize is they've got to make themselves better.
Yeah. You can help, but you can't fix somebody. You can be supportive. You can help.
Right.
The person has to want to get better. First of all, that's sure. Got to be the first step.
Yeah.
So she had good intentions, but it usually ended up badly for her. You know, her father was an alcoholic, and that got so bad at one point that her mother left him, took Patricia and her three siblings away from their father. So I mentioned she brought three kids into the marriage. Cliff and Patricia had two daughters together, Harley and Autumn, during their marriage. And they lived in the same house in Niskayuna that Cliff grew up in. But this relationship was not good. I mean, from the word go, it's been reported that Cliff was abusive to Patricia and to the kids. You know, there were reports of him beating her over like the smallest thing.
Yeah.
Right? You and I always go back to sleeping with the enemy.
Absolutely, we do, yeah.
Because there were such small things.
Yeah, the
dish towels not lined right. up. Now, I don't know that this was to that extent, but it really talked about like just the smallest things would set him off.
And that's all over control, right? Mm-hmm. It's more about control, you know, showing her that he's controlling the relationship than anything.
And it's a good point because I think what we're going to see with Cliff Burns is that when things really go south, you know, when he commits this murder, it's when everything starts to get out of his control. He feels like he has no control.
Yeah.
So I do think there's some real validity to what you're saying.
Yeah, I think when somebody uses violence, I think when somebody uses, and a lot of people on both sides do this, where they use, you know, verbal abuse, it's a struggle for power. I mean, you're trying to beat that person down by saying insane things to them about themselves. That's verbal abuse, and that's where you're trying to shift the power into your arena and take it away from them.
There was another report that he pointed a gun at her at one time. Well, who's that? That's his father.
That's what he learned, man. That's how we do things right in this family.
We abuse the women that we love.
Yeah.
If need be, we will go to the level of using a firearm.
Yeah. I'll show it to her and let her know I'm not afraid to do it, just like dad.
So there's no doubt, right, that there was a large degree of domestic violence in Cliff's youth. There's no doubt that he displayed a large degree of domestic violence a number of times against his second wife, Patricia. So in 2008, they separated. But this would be an on-off-again type of thing over the years. So apparently Cliff would tell Patricia, you know what, hey, I've changed. I'm going to be a good husband.
But, you know, that's what guys that want power, when they lose it, that's what they say to get that person back, because they've kind of molded that person at one point. Now they want to get them back. And they say that. They say, look, I'm not that same guy. I don't do that anymore. I'm changed for you. I'm going to show you. And out of a little bit of guilt, I think the spouse comes back. And then that's when it's kind of like they set it in motion. Now I got you back. I'll string it along for a little bit, then I'll go back to my normal ways. That's what a lot of them do. Almost all of them do that.
And that's exactly what he did, right? For a few weeks at a time, he could be a good husband after Patricia would let him back, but it never lasted. You know, he always reverted back into that cycle of control, domestic violence, yeah, physical, mental abuse, all that stuff.
Sure. When his stress levels go up, he's going to go back to what he knows best, what makes him feel good. And that's belittling or worse to his spouse.
Or hurting. Yeah, hurting. Worse would be hurting. Eventually, it got to be too much for her, and Patricia left for good. She even took out a protection order against her husband, and she told him that she wanted a divorce. Now, not only did Patricia take out a protection order, but there was another protection order out against Cliff to stay away from her mom and stepdad. So obviously this guy couldn't get along with anybody.
Right.
In her family, at least.
And he was going to try probably to go to, you know, their house thinking that she might be there to try to win her back. And they didn't want anything to do with it.
All right, Gibbs, let's take a quick minute to talk about our sponsor, BetterHelp. Listen, you just talked about it. The holiday season is one that's tough for many people. So for our listeners out there, if you have anything that's interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. They offer licensed professional counselors who specialize in all types of issues, depression, anxiety, family conflict, and so much more. This is not a crisis line. They have 3,000 U.S. licensed therapists across all 50 states, but it's available worldwide. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. Anything you share is confidential, and you can get help at your own time and at your own pace. It is so convenient. TCAT listeners can get 10% off your first month by using the discount code TCAT at betterhelp.com/TCAT. So why not get started today? All you have to do is simply fill out a questionnaire, and this helps them assess your needs as well as match you with the right counselor for you. So go to betterhelp.com/TCAT and use our promo code TCAT to get 10% off your first month. You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust SimpliSafe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. SimpliSafe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. detection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. SimpliSafe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/TCAT. That's simplisafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. So obviously, based on the protection order, Patricia was scared of him. Her mom, her stepfather were somewhat, had to be somewhat scared of him. You would have to think the children who witnessed a lot of this abuse would have been somewhat scared by him.
Right.
Patricia moved to an apartment in Lake Lucerne, and everybody went with her. All the kids went with her except for one of her daughters, Harley. Harley chose to go with her dad. And she's done a number of interviews and talked about the fact that he never laid a finger on her. He was nice to her. But that didn't last. When she moved in with him, it was a matter of months, I think, before she started to see him acting towards her the same way that he had acted towards her mom. And you know what? She didn't stick around. She's like, hey, forget you, man.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
I'm going to go live with my mom. I'm not putting up with this. And that's what she did. Now, in the middle of all this, and I think it was 2010, Patricia lost a 15-year-old daughter from a previous marriage. I mentioned she had three children from a previous marriage. This was a daughter named Crystalyn. She died one night in her sleep. They did multiple autopsies, and they just couldn't figure out how she died. You know, there was no drugs in her system, no alcohol. They couldn't figure out anything, you know, biological. And I did read one article, Gibbs, that said this was the type of death that makes up about 1-2% of what they called unexplainable deaths each year. You always think, right? If you do an autopsy, you'll be able to get to what caused someone to die.
Right.
But no, there are 1-2% of deaths every year that they just cannot figure out. But it has been said that the death of her daughter was probably the turning point in Patricia's life. Right. I mentioned this relationship with Cliff was on again, off again. Well, after this, it was off. This was the end, right? She moved to the apartment. She didn't want to have anything to do with him. She even met a new man. It's a guy by the name of Ted Backus. But this relationship wouldn't be good either. You know, he was abusive. Apparently, he went over to her apartment one night and fired a handgun into the ceiling.
What is wrong with these guys?
I don't know, Gibbs. The only thing I can think of is that, you know, these guys just didn't learn any form of conflict resolution. They never did as kids, right? It was always, you know, I'm in the sandbox, and if you take my toy, or I want that toy and you've got it, I'm just going to punch you in the face and I'm going to take it.
That's what I'm going to do.
That's kind of what I equate it to. They didn't learn maybe from their parents the right way. Well, obviously Cliff didn't, because his dad shot his mom. But this guy did. You know, he assaulted Patricia, fired a handgun into the ceiling. He was arrested, but apparently only got probation. And we're gonna hear later, because Cliff does some interviews with police after he's arrested. This didn't set well with Cliff Burns. He talks about it a lot. So we're getting closer to the murder. Cliff Burns had been estranged from his daughters for about 8 months, at least, leading up to the murder, which we know is going to happen on December 24th, 2013. Cliff was a self-employed tree trimmer. He's referred to himself as a pro tree climber, which I didn't know you could go professional.
You can, man.
But I guess if you own a business as a tree climber, you are a professional tree climber. It's not something I would want to do, but
that's a young guy's job there, man.
I'm afraid of heights, so I'm out.
That you get that. You get, yeah, that issue as well.
Now, 2 days before the murder, 14-year-old Autumn texted her dad. She hadn't talked to him in at least 8 months. But she texted him to wish him Merry Christmas and to tell him that she loved him. But it's the response that she got back from her dad. The text was very ominous. He texted back, "I have a special gift coming soon, and it's something for everyone to talk about. It will be hand-delivered on foot, not by car. It's a very special gift, so I hope all of your friends are there to see it, especially your sister, Harley." Now, from a loving father, that wouldn't raise any eyebrows, right?
Right.
But the family, including Patricia, they were very concerned after everyone read this text message from Cliff, because they knew what type of guy he was. They knew the anger that he had, and they were fearful of what this text really meant and what he might do. Now, Autumn did respond to that text, and she said, "Get it together. I know what you think you want to do, and believe me, that won't end well. The only reason you feel so bad is because of what happened to your parents. You haven't ever got the time to grieve." That's what his 14-year-old wrote back to him.
Wow.
So that brings us to that fateful night of Christmas Eve, 2013. Clifford Burns is now 46 years old. And on this day, he was more than agitated. He was enraged. Like I said, according to him, he had not seen his kids in 8 months. But that day, which is so strange to get this call on Christmas Eve, but he got a call about late child support payments from, not from Patricia, but from somebody with the county saying, "Hey, you're behind. If you don't get current, we're going to put an arrest warrant out for you." This is on Christmas Eve. He gets this. Patricia was at her apartment preparing for a big Christmas dinner the next day. You know, she had planned to have all the kids were going to be there. Her mother and stepfather were going to be there. But that night, Cliff showed up at Patricia's Lake Luzerne apartment. He was dressed in camouflage. He was wearing a ski mask covering his face. And he burst through the door of her apartment and began attacking her in the kitchen. So a couple of her daughters were there. Autumn was there and Megan was there. Megan was one of her daughters from a previous marriage. She was older. I think she was about maybe 22 years old at the time.
Okay.
She tried to protect her mother as Cliff began stabbing Patricia. Now, she didn't know it was Cliff at first. This guy had a ski mask on. But in the act of trying to protect her mother, she suffered some very serious knife wounds in the process. But the other thing that happened in the struggle, his mask came off. And obviously they knew.
Sure.
As soon as the mask came off.
Who it was.
So after the attack, he took off, ran out of the house, got into his car, and sped away. Autumn was 14 years old. Autumn was his daughter. And she was the one that called 911. And some of the descriptions Gibbs of this call, they're just heartbreaking. You know, she said to the 911 operator, "My mother is dying. Please help, please help. Oh God, please. Oh God, please help my mother. Help me, help me, help me." She was hysterical, right? She had just witnessed her father brutally stabbing her mother. And you can hear her through the phone tell her mom, "You're strong. You can do this, mom. I know you can. Mom, please stay with me." So she's hysterical, but she's trying to calm her mom down as well. And the dispatcher does a good job. She calms Autumn down, at least enough to be able to give her some instructions, you know, how to apply pressure to her mom's wounds. And Autumn's still talking. You know, she's saying, "She's bleeding. I have blood all over me. And my sister's bleeding. She's going to die too." But the one thing that she's able to do on this call is tell the operator who did this to her mother. There was no doubt. It was her father, Cliff Burns. And then you hear her say, "Hold on, mommy, please. She's dying. I need help. You have to help us. She's the last thing I have." Like I said, I mean, that just imagine that scene in your head, a 14-year-old girl trying to care for her mom. Her older sister is bleeding, has some pretty serious wounds herself. So eventually emergency personnel, arrive on scene. They take Patricia to Glen Falls Hospital, but they couldn't do anything to save her. Gibbs, she dies. She received almost 30 stab wounds. And they had to take Megan to the hospital as well. She was treated. And I mentioned her wounds were pretty severe too. Cliff cut her arms so badly that it was said some of the wounds were down to the bone.
That's brutal, man. So much anger.
That you're ripping through flesh and hitting bone with your knife.
That's just so much anger, man. I'm good with a knife. I'm telling you, that's a lot of anger.
Well, not to mention that some of these were so close to hitting arteries.
Right.
That she was lucky to survive. That's what doctors said.
Extremely lucky.
But the thing about this case, Gibbs, is it's not a whodunit, right? Everybody knows who committed this murder. It's Cliff Burns.
Yeah.
And police are looking for him right away. And it doesn't take them long to find him, but it's where they find him that's so strange. He's parked in the sheriff's office parking lot. So they arrest him. But when they catch up to him, when they start talking to him in the car, apparently he said to the police officer, "I've done a bad thing. I need to go to jail." So they take him into custody. They begin to question him. And this is what I mentioned, right? This is all on tape. It's 5, 6, 7 hours worth of tape out there that you can listen to. Most of the time, it's Cliff Burns talking about the injustices that he perceived to have been committed against him. Having to pay child support. Not making enough money, not being able to see his kids. He talks a lot about this Ted Backus guy that was his wife's boyfriend that shot the, got arrested for shooting the gun. But he also puts his wife down at almost every chance.
Yeah, which is terrible. I mean,
he says the most heinous things about her, calls her a whore and a stripper and,
probably said that stuff to her face, too.
He probably did.
You know, that's I mean, man, if you're married to somebody and he's calling you a whore, what are you doing sitting there with him?
Now, I've been around some guys who had a mouth on them. I don't know if I've ever heard anyone quite like Cliff Burns. He says the F word about every third word. And it's really hard to say the F word 5, 6, 7 times in one sentence. But somehow this guy pulls it off.
Well,
I mean, so just a disclaimer right up front.
Sure.
The language is going to be a lot rougher than probably what you're used to on True Crime All the Time. This guy makes Andrew Dice Clay look like Mr. Rogers. I'm not saying something. I used to like Andrew Dice Clay back in the day.
Yeah. You know, he's been in some pretty good movies lately. Not as his raunchy self, but just playing some good roles where he plays that older, like an older Italian guy. He's actually, he's pulling off some, he's been in some really good movies lately.
You going to name one or are you just going to let that?
I was trying to think of the name of the movie, especially the one I just seen not too
long ago.
You
were probably hoping I wouldn't ask you that.
Yeah, but it was, I mean, he actually did really well. I was really surprised.
I saw him in something not too long ago.
Yeah.
And I'm struggling to think of it as well.
But it was good. Maybe it was, you know what? He did one with the movie about Queen. He played...
Oh, was he in that? I haven't seen that. Bohemian Rhapsody?
Yeah, he played the girlfriend, then wife, the father. Stepfather or father, I can't remember which role. But he did a really good job in that.
No, I just thought of the one that I was thinking of. It was A Star is Born. He played Lady Gaga's father in A Star is Born. I don't know if you've seen it.
Oh, that's what it is.
That's the one you're thinking
yeah,
of?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Not Queen. It was A Star is Born.
Star is Born.
Yeah. Yeah. We saw both of those movies pretty close to each other. That's why I think I got it mixed up. It was Star is Born.
I was going to say, that's something else if he was in both of those.
Yeah. Those were both. I was wrong. But he did a really good job.
I thought he was good.
Yeah. I liked it.
So we're going to play some pieces of this interview and then, you know, we'll talk about them. But again, language disclaimer, but you have to. First of all, I don't even think I could edit this out if I wanted to. And obviously we're playing snippets of
it's fun. Let it roll.
What is about 6 or 7 hours. Now, as the interview starts, he sounds he's pretty peaceful.
I had a lot of things to talk about. And I want talk to somebody I can fucking talk to and trust, and you seem like the guy. Can you just talk to me?
I'm going to have one of my investigators come in and talk to you, Clifford.
All right.
They're all very reasonable people.
No, they're not reasonable here.
Well, the investigator that comes in and talk to you, I assure you he's going to be reasonable. I'm going to take the cuff off your left hand.
Yes, sir. I love my daughters. I haven't seen them in fucking 8 months because of 2 court orders. And you know, it's Christmas time. When is the fucking man I snapped?
Clifford, I'm going to switch this around with it.
Why didn't you guys just fucking put a bullet in my head? I felt you. You wanted to.
Clifford, we don't want to hurt anybody.
I don't want to either. Do you understand what a man goes through, officer?
Just look straight in your hand.
I spend $250 a week on child support and couldn't see my kids because she lonely. Her and Teddy back has put a court order against me. Today, family court calls up my lawyer and says there's a warrant out for my arrest for missing 2 payments in the middle of the winter. I have nothing to live for. I'm living in a one-room fucking apartment. She took everything from me, sir.
All right, so you probably got what I meant about the F-word there, but he's not too upset at this point. And I want to point that out because it gets much, much worse.
Right.
His demeanor changes throughout this 7-hour interview. Now, that was kind of hard because so you have to picture this. He's sitting next to a table in a chair, and what you could hear was the officer uncuffing him and cuffing him to the table. There's this big metal rod on the table, and one of his hands is cuffed. But it's not going to keep him from trying to get at these police officers later on.
Yeah, you can tell he's frustrated. And with the way he perceives the system working against him.
Yeah, and that's why I called through 7 hours of this audio to try to find the right clips that really kind of get to what he thinks is the root of the problem. And then, you know, he starts to get into more of what he's angry about, what he's resentful about.
Well, I'm going to tell you what happened. My ex-wife put a court order against me. Teddy Backus went over in the house and shot the fucking house up with a gun and got all misdemeanors. It was an apartment complex with kids in it. An unregistered illegal handgun, and he gets all misdemeanors. That's what I wanted to do to her face. Right up with a fucking knife. She took my kids away from me, everything I fucking have. Today I get a fucking call from my lawyer saying they're coming with a warrant for my arrest for missing 2 child support payments. I stayed away. I haven't seen my kids in 8 months. It's fucking Christmas. I am the fucking devil.
Where's your kids now?
They're home. I don't know where the fuck they are. I haven't seen them in 8 months. When this broad can do this on Christmas, it was my last straw. I'd rather live in prison. Do you know when a woman snaps you and keeps your kids away from you? What it does to a man? That you work and pay for your kids your whole fucking life? Then the Backus brothers rigged the charges when the fucking guy goes over and shoots my old lady's house up and beats the fuck out of her and he gets misdemeanors. You know what happened up there. All misdemeanors, 9 of them, when he shot the house up with an unregistered handgun. Do you know who Teddy Backus is? I know you know who he is. If I ever could get my hands on him, I'd fucking kill him.
All right, you have that.
So the agitation level is growing
sure. A
little bit. But I also think he slipped up a couple of times there. At one point talked about taking a knife to his wife's face. And then when the officer asked him, you know, did he see his kids? Where are his kids at? He said at home. And then really quickly, he said, I don't know where they're at.
Right.
I don't know if you caught it or not, but it was, I think a pretty big slip up. Now, at one point in the interview, Gibbs, he talks about going full blown Rambo on this entire town.
And you remember Rambo, man. He had that big-ass knife like I carry. I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah.
So.
You guys, you deal with weapons every day. I had AK-47s, AR-15s at my disposal. I could have made this a war. You want to know where my mindset was? Take her out, spray paint the building, let's play back his boys, and take him in the mountains. You would have to drop a fucking platoon in for me. A platoon, brothers. I kept the war. I came here and did the right thing. I turned myself in. I'll go to prison. I'm done. I threw my life away tonight. Is she dead?
I have just came to work, so.
But you know what? I didn't want to kill her. Really, I got emotional when my children are there.
Got emotional by hurting them, too.
But he said, what did he say? I didn't want to kill her.
Yeah.
Now, he's not going to confess, and I should have said this up front. He's not going to confess during this whole 7 hours, but he's going to say these little things, and I think they're kind of slip-ups.
Yeah, as he's telling his story?
Right, as he's telling his story.
How he was wronged by his wife and his ex-wife and his her boyfriend and boyfriend's brother.
Yeah, that's probably the closest that he comes in the entire thing to admitting what he really did.
Yeah.
Then in the next clip, you can hear more anger coming out as they're really trying to question him about what happened that night.
I fucking lost it. I don't even know how the fuck I got up here. I ain't got no gas in my fucking car. I'm down to no money. I got no fucking food. I don't know what she's wanting me to do, and I got a lady violate me on fucking Christmas Eve, and I don't even see the kids. I just fucking pay. I can't take it. Put me in the jail so I'm not giving her. I don't care no more. I lost everything as a man. I don't even know what the fuck I did tonight. Next thing you know, I'm on my way to the Warren Chairs. Like, I'm going to file a petition. I'm just lost. I don't even fucking know.
Cliff, you told me you went to see your kids. You get to see them tonight?
I don't even know. I didn't see my kids.
Why is that, Cliff?
Because the fucking broad don't let me see him. She took me out of her life with a court order for another man, and I lost everything. I just pay. I don't go out. I'm scared to go out of my house. Ask anybody in an apartment building. I never leave unless I get a business call to go make money. I give up. I give up. I give up.
So you have that.
So we have some anger issues.
Yeah.
You can hear him rattling these handcuffs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And at the very end, he jumps up and just about flips the whole table, like knocks over a computer and...
Yeah.
He's
rage.
He gets very... This 5, 6, 7, however long it is, hour interview, I mean, it goes from him being racist as all get out.
Yeah.
I didn't put any of that in here. He's very racist. He says some unbelievably bad things about people, certain very specific people.
Right.
But, you know, at some points he's very jovial with the police. And he talks about the fact that, hey, you know, he's Irish, they're Irish, they should have each other's backs. He's almost playing around.
You can tell, you know, he's living through this story, though. You can tell he's upset. He's angry because he lost his wife to another man, right? No man wants to lose his wife or his girlfriend to another man, but he's living it, and it's because he doesn't see that he did anything wrong to lose her. That's the problem.
Well, so he goes from jovial to angry. At certain points, he's crying.
Yeah.
And then it flips again, and then he's angry. But it's really 7 hours, or however long it is, of this. Every time they ask him about that night specifically, all he does is go back and say, you know, this lady at the county said she was going to put me in jail. My wife won't let me see my kids. This Backus guy got off when he should have went to prison.
Right.
He goes just back to those things every time.
I don't have no money. I can't eat. I can't do anything.
But they keep trying. The police officers keep trying to get him to talk about what happened that night, but he doesn't want to.
What happened tonight over there?
Over where? You keep asking me that.
What happened up there?
I don't know what the fuck happened. I blacked the fuck out.
Was there when you got there?
I couldn't tell you nothing. I wanted to see my old lady until I wanted to see my fucking kids.
Did she meet you at the door?
Mm-hmm.
She wouldn't let you in?
Listen, I want to go to a jail cell. I don't want to sit here no more.
Alright.
You ask me another question about when I got there, I'm going to spit on you. Alright? Don't ask me again.
Well, he's done.
Gibbs, you asked me another question about that. I'm going to spit on you from here.
Yeah. Well,
this guy would have, no doubt in my mind.
Oh, I think he would have for
sure. He would have spit on these people.
He has nothing to lose at this point.
No, and at certain points, if he wasn't handcuffed, he would have fought everyone in that room. He was so angry.
He was coming over that table.
He would have for sure. But there was one part in there in particular where he admits going over that night to talk to his wife about wanting to see the kids. And the police officer does a really quick follow-up question and says, did she meet you at the door? And it was either it was like a mm-mm, mm-hmm.
Right.
It sounded almost like a uh-huh, but yeah, like a a real truncated one.
Slowly putting the story together.
Yeah, but they never really get him to admit to anything. Every time they get to a certain point, he just says either he doesn't want to talk about it or he goes back and starts talking about all the things he's already talked about. But at the end of the interview, and this is the last clip I want to play, Burns says this.
I'm still married, so I mean, what's the last words of a fucking wedding? When you go get married, what do they say? What are the last words? This is a very intelligent man here. He'll death do his part, baby doll. Get me the fuck out of here. Have a seat, sir. I don't want to have a seat. You did your stuff. Can you put me in a jail cell, please? And throw away the kid. I don't have no questions because I don't know none of this. I'll never look at this again because I can't. You going to give a copy to the lawyer?
Yes, I will.
My life's over with.
All right.
I know you understand that.
Yeah, so death to us part. I mean, so it's death to us part, not murder till we part. It's death till we part.
It's death do us part.
Or death do us part.
Isn't that what it is?
Death till we part. I don't know. But all I know is it's not murder. You know, it's if you die of natural causes, we part. It's not I'm going to force the death upon you.
Now, okay. No, you're right. I'm not disagreeing with you. But the way that I took it was that he's not going to come out and say that he killed her. But he's saying, what is the last thing that they say?
And if it's death, do we part? Guess what?
And he says baby at the end of it.
Yeah, baby doll.
Baby doll. So baby me, doll. For me, reading between the lines, he's saying, yeah, I did this. Put me in a cell, lock me away. Why does he keep saying that? He's admitting it without wanting to come out and say it.
Right.
True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. You know, my wife and I, we both use Rakuten when we shop online to help save money. My wife uses it more than I do because, well, let's face it, she shops more than I do. Rakuten is the most rewarding way to shop and save because members earn cash back on everything that they buy. Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while doing it? It really is a no-brainer. I use it for all my techie stuff at stores like Best Buy. My wife uses it at stores like Sephora and Macy. Best of all, membership is free and it's easy to sign up. It's very easy to use. Cashback rates change daily. So start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up. Now, one of the guards in the county jail where Burns was held, he would later on say that Cliff Burns threatened everyone in that place on a daily basis. He said that Burns told him directly, I'll cut your throat, take out your tongue, and map the floor with your blood. That's extremely specific.
It is.
That's not I'm going to hurt you.
No.
I'm going to take your tongue out, and I'm going to mop the floor with it.
It's an angry guy.
Now, I would think, Gibbs, I've never had any type of job like this, but as any type of guard, right, in a whether it was a county jail or a prison or whatever, you need to have your head on a swivel.
Yeah.
At all times. But I would think after a man like Cliff Burns says that he's going to cut out your tongue and do some
mopping
with it, you would be on what? Extra
special secret double duty swivel.
Something like that.
You'd be paying a lot of attention.
You got one angry elf on your hands there.
Yeah, exactly. So the trial of Clifford Burns was scheduled for June 16th, 2014. And his lawyers leading up to the trial, they were weighing all kinds of different options about how to defend him at trial. One thing that they were thinking about using was the defense of extreme emotional disturbance. But they would never get to this point because in April of 2014, Clifford Burns pleaded guilty to second-degree murder in the stabbing death of his wife. So he's not willing to admit that he did it during all these interviews, but eventually, as the trial's coming closer, he does. And in front of the judge, he admitted that he went into a rage and he stabbed Patricia with the intent to kill her. But what makes it even worse, Gibbs, and we said this up front, is his admission that he did this in front of his daughters.
Which is absolutely terrible. I mean, it's all terrible, but...
And, you know, we talked about it. How can a man ever hurt his wife, for one thing? Whether you have a good relationship or it's in the shitter, I don't care. But then, second, how in the hell can a man do something like that in front of his children?
You know, I don't know, but I mean, I've heard personal accounts of, you know, husbands screaming at the top of their lungs to their wives with the worst possible things you could ever say about that person
in front of their children.
In front of their kids. You know, it's one thing just to say it to your spouse,
which you shouldn't do.
Shouldn't do anyway. But to say it in front of your own kids. You know, this is their mom you're talking about. How do you even do that? And how do you walk away feeling good about yourself? And how do you ever forgive somebody for saying that stuff? I hear it way too often. And it's just, man, it just shocks me how brutal people can be with just words, let alone, you know, we know what people can do with their hands too, you know, and it's sad.
But now it did take Cliff a little while to get to that point where he was willing to admit that. Initially, he tried to say that he didn't do it on purpose. But when the judge pressed him on it, he admitted that he took a knife with him that night with the intention that his wife was going to die. Now, we're going to talk about it in a minute. He didn't use the knife that he took with him. But the judge asked him, in that last minute, when you got on top of her, that's when you intended to kill her? And Cliff Burns replied, yes, sir. So as part of the plea deal, Burns was sentenced to 23 years to life in prison. But that wasn't all. He was also ordered to pay restitution to his daughter, Megan, who suffered injuries to her arm, we talked about, while she was trying to help protect her mother. So to do this, he signed over a piece of property that he owned. But we have to talk about this plea deal. You know, you and I don't like some of these plea deals that come about. Now, the family agreed to this one. They consented to it. Number one, because it eliminated the trial, which certainly would have forced the daughters to testify. They didn't want that. And I don't say this a lot, but I really think this was the best move in this case because it only shaved 2 years off. The mandatory sentence was 25 years to life. So he gets 23 years to life instead of 25 years to life. And the two girls don't have to go through... And the family doesn't have to go through what would have been
recounting
a
and
horrible
hearing that,
trial.
You don't want them to hear a lot.
So I actually, you know, in reading that, I liked what they did there. His sentencing hearing occurred in September, and it was emotionally charged, as you can imagine. Some of the children gave statements before the judge handed down the sentence. Megan was very emotional in speaking about the impact of her mother's death. She told the court, what Cliff really took from me that Christmas Eve was my heart. Harley also gave a very emotional statement, and she talked directly to her father and said, you didn't think about your own children. And she talked about how, you know, she was forced to become an adult very quickly after her mother's death. She said, what is a 15-year-old girl supposed to do without her mother? I mean, can you imagine your own kids saying something to you like this after, you know, you've done something horrific? I just can't imagine it. Now, Burns had a new attorney by the time this sentencing hearing came up, a different attorney than the one that was defending him, you know, up until that plea agreement. And this new attorney argued that Cliff Burns should be allowed to withdraw his guilty plea. He tried to argue that Burns had ineffective counsel at trial and that the district attorney had coached Burns' daughters into urging him to plead guilty. And I mentioned this just a little bit ago, but the attorney argued that the knife that killed Patricia was not the knife that Cliff Burns brought with him to the apartment that night. So I think Gibbs, with this, he's trying to argue intent. Right? Yeah, he brought a knife with him, but he didn't use that knife to kill Patricia because he really didn't intend to kill her. But things escalated. He ended up stabbing her with one of her own kitchen knives. This is his argument. I don't know. I'm not buying it. To me, no. It doesn't matter. He killed her.
Of course.
And he got second degree murder anyway. But the DA was ready for this. They probably, you know, they planned on his defense counsel having an argument. And she brought out the ominous text message exchange between Burns and his daughter that happened 2 days before the murder.
Which basically, I mean, should solidify her case.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't say that he's going to come murder anybody, but it's pretty ominous coming from a man like him. But that wasn't it. She also offered up evidence of a note that was found in Burns' home when they searched it late on Christmas Eve. And the note was basically a handwritten will detailing out that his daughters were to get his remaining possessions.
Meaning that he really meant this to be a murder-suicide.
Or he knew he wasn't coming back.
Or he wasn't coming. Well, I mean,
one way or the other.
Yeah, you're right. Either he was going to take care of himself or he was hoping the police would.
Or there was a chance he would get killed in the shootout or something. That's pretty strange timing, right? That you're going to leave a note detailing who should get what right before you plan to go see your wife dressed in camo carrying a knife.
Yeah.
Now, his defense team would argue that he left the note because he knew he was going to get arrested because he was going to violate the protection order.
Well, that's not why you leave but the note was basically a will.
Right. Couldn't you write a will in prison?
Yeah. I mean, you didn't need to write a will. If you didn't think you were going to die by killing yourself or making sure you got killed by, you know, suicide by police.
Or even if there was a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. So after all this, the judge handed down Burns a sentence of 23 years to life. But on top of that, he issued a permanent protection order barring Burns from ever contacting his two daughters, Harley and Autumn, and his stepdaughter, Megan. Burns wasn't happy about this. He got fiery with the judge after hearing this part of the sentence. And the judge said this to him, quote, "You lost all custodial rights by committing outrageous abuse of your children and by murdering their mother." I couldn't agree more with that statement.
Yeah, no, I agree, you know, and it needed to be said. He needed to hear that. You know, he's always pushing on everybody. Poor me, you did this, she did this, that, this, you know. I'm just a product of the environment I was forced in. So the judge laid it out. Let him know. This is why you're not going to see your kids.
Now, the judge did say that his two daughters, Harley and Autumn, they could apply to have this order modified if they wanted to when they turned 18.
And who knows? Maybe they do. Maybe one of them will. Who knows? I think they're probably pretty scarred.
Well, I'm sure they are. Now, so. I have seen some interviews with Harley, especially where she said, you know what? Still my dad.
Yeah.
He did horrible things, but he's still my dad.
Yeah, so there you go. She might go visit, you know. She might say, even though all this was terrible, very terrible, I still want to get to know the other part of him. Because, like you said, I got half of him in me.
And be tough.
It would be tough, you know. And I seen in some stories that, you know, Clifford, he's not apologetic about anything he did.
No, he wasn't at the trial, he wasn't at the sentencing, he's still not now.
And I think in his mind, he thinks that he went there to get some resolution to this problem that was put onto him, And he didn't expect it to go as far as it did in his head, but it did. And so now he's, why am I apologizing?
Yeah, I think you're probably right in the fact that that's what he wants to believe. And maybe that is the truth. I don't know. Or maybe he really did set off for that house knowing that he was going to commit a murder.
All you have to do is listen to the tapes. I mean, even if you just listen to what we played, which is a small portion of the 7 hours, right? But if you listen to that, you can see he definitely has anger management issues. I mean, he can go
big time.
He can go from 0 to 10 extremely fast. And I don't mean 10 like he's coming across the table. And if he could, he would rip those handcuffs off.
Yeah, you only heard it once, I think. It probably happened 10, 15, 20 times.
Yeah.
Where he jumped up, yanked his arm as hard as he could, kept knocking the computers off the table,
but
called these police every name in the book.
Yeah. And his ex knew this. That's why she got away from him, because she's lived it before and she finally had enough, you know.
And got the protection orders and all that stuff.
Exactly.
But the other thing is, so not only was he unapologetic, he didn't say a word at the sentencing hearing. So this is after his own daughter stood up and said, you know, these things, he didn't apologize. He didn't say anything to them. And I found that very strange.
Yeah, I think you would have maybe at least looked them in the eyes and said,
I'm sorry this happened.
Yeah.
Something.
Never meant this to happen. Didn't mean, you know, and I'm sorry, I'm never going to see you again. You know, I love you guys. I hope that one day you forgive me, whatever, and move on.
Nothing.
Nothing. Just cold. And people are like that, man. People can just emotionally just shut off and be cold.
And I think this guy was a lot of things like that. He was cold. He was angry. I think he was just a mean guy, too, in some form or fashion. But that is it. That's the story of Clifford Burns and the murder of his wife, Patricia Burns.
Yeah.
We'll get some voicemails. You want to check those out?
Yeah, let's hear those. Let's get something positive, man.
Hey, Mike and Gibby, this is Shep down in Memphis again. At Shelby Farms Park in Memphis, the largest urban park in the United States, 4,000 acres. Come out here, walk with my dog for an hour and listen to you guys. And I was just thinking this would be a perfect place to hide a body. And so when I walk around, I'm always looking in the weeds, sort of eyeballing everything to see if there's a hand sticking up. You guys got me all freaked out now. Anyway, December 5th. I want to wish you and all your listeners a happy holiday and a happy new year, and keep your own time ticking, guys. Bye-bye.
All right, we always like to hear from Shep.
I think he's casing the area.
He's casing it, looking for spots. Now, I think, and we hear this all the time from people, Gibbs, how listening to true crime, and whether it's us in particular or, you know, another true crime podcast, it makes people a little more aware.
You said keep your head on a swivel.
Right, of their surroundings, and it makes them think a little bit more. Might scare them from time to time. But you know what? Being a little bit scared every now and then is not a bad thing if it makes you be more cautious. I think the worst thing that can happen is you're just walking wherever, and you're oblivious to your surroundings.
Yeah.
You know, I get on my kids all the time about that, those damn smartphones, right? I talk about that.
Yeah.
Now they got those AirPods, the Apple headphones.
Oh, yeah. You can't hear nothing.
No.
I know.
You know, to get them, you have to call them on their cell phone.
Yeah.
In the house.
Yeah, I got people that work for me at the office, and I'll be walking up to them having a conversation, and I'm waiting for a response. I'm like, And then I realize they have those.
You can't see.
You can't see them. And then I realize it's what they got.
Hi, my name is Julie, and I've been binge watching for about two and a half weeks. And from the minute you started to where I'm at today, you guys have got so much better, and the play on each other is awesome. And your topics are, to die for. All right. You have a great day and keep your own time ticking.
So clearly she found us on Gibby TV.
Where she's binge watching.
Where she's been watching us.
Yeah, but you know, I've heard that before, and I would agree with her. Gibbs, when I go back and listen to some of those first episodes, they're a little painful. But like with anything, you know, when you're starting out, we didn't know how to podcast. We'd never done a podcast.
And we weren't sitting across from each other. We were on Skype, and I was sitting at my dining room table on my on my iPhone, and you were here, you know. So
I think we have come a long way, but I appreciate that.
Hey, guys, this is Andrew. I live down in the Cincinnati greater area, so close by you guys. Just wanted to call in and say I'm a big fan of you. I listen pretty much every day at work, trying to catch up on all the old episodes now, but big fan. And the case that I have actually just been looking into and thought that was very interesting was the Edward Wing Edwards case, and I'm sure you guys know about him, but from what I've heard, he is a very interesting guy, lots of bad stuff, but not only was he a killer, but from what I've read, he enjoyed setting people up for his own crime. So I just would love to get your guys' take on it, see what you think about it. I think it would be a really good episode, and it is definitely interesting enough. But like I said, big fan, kind of close by you guys, so I enjoy listening. Thanks for everything you guys do. Keep your own time ticking.
All right, we appreciate that, Andrew, and he is definitely on the list. With that one, Gibbs, I've always thought it was strange that with your last name being Edwards, you would name your son Edward.
Yeah.
I just always found that strange.
It is strange. Be like naming you Michael.
Or be Fergus Ferguson.
Well, that would have been kind of cool, though.
That would be a cool
one. I would have thought you from England, though. It seems
Scotland.
Like
Fergus.
Okay. Well, whatever. Play Great Britain.
Okay.
But
Scotland,
United Kingdom.
I think your geography is spot on.
It is spot on.
Know what you said in the beginning.
Yeah. So he's just down the road, man. So maybe he'll.
Yeah, he's close.
If we have that big meetup, he'll pop on up.
Maybe.
Hi guys. Hi. Okay. Of course, I talked before the beep. Anyways, hi guys. I wanted to say it's about a month and a half I listened to your podcast, and it's by far the best podcast I've heard. Probably ever, also because I'm a big, big fan of true crime. I've always been a fan of true crime, and this just meets all the prerequisites. It's so detailed. Yeah, you can tell that there's so much work behind it. And, so congratulations really for such a good podcast. You guys are both really funny. You compensate for each other. And I mean, you fit so well. The chemistry is perfect. So, it's very hard for me to say I'm team anything. I'm team both of you for sure. One wouldn't work as well without the other. I'm sure of it. Oh, by the way, I call from Italy. I don't know if you have many listeners from Italy. But another great thing your podcast does for me is it keeps my English alive whilst I live here. I'm Italian, but it allows me to keep on listening to something in English, not forget the language. So thank you so much. And please keep doing what you do, because it just made everything better. When my drive to work is now pleasurable, like 100% great. And when I have like dead moments at work and I need something to keep me awake, it's just your podcast I turn to. So please don't stop and keep your own time ticking. Bye.
So I like to say that my English was not as very good either until I started doing the podcast, and my English got better and my Italiano got worse.
So her English was so good that, to be honest with you, when I first started listening to that, I had no idea she was from another country.
No, if anything, I thought maybe a little Scottish in there, maybe. But then she said Italy.
I heard an accent,
yeah,
but I didn't know where it was from.
I like how she says, we compensate each other, and you need to compensate me more.
I don't think that's what she said.
I need more compensation.
I don't think she said that word at all. All right, Gibbs, so mailbag.
Yeah, let's do the mailbag.
Big week in the mailbag.
Did we?
It was almost like a real true Christmas / Festivus miracle, Gibbs. We got a bunch of beef jerky.
Ooh, you like beef jerky.
Ooh.
I like beef jerky. But I don't know if I ever get to see all the beef jerky that comes in, because you control.
Oh, here we go.
You control the whole mail.
This is going to be like the chair thing again.
So I was like, do you open it up and go, man, that's my favorite beef jerky.
So I take that out.
Yeah, and you're like, yeah, we got some beef jerky, but I knew you wouldn't want that.
But we got some really interesting beef jerky. Gary Riley, I believe it was Gary Riley who sent it from Buck Thornton's World of Jerky.
Ooh, there's a world of jerky?
There is. We got some ostrich, venison, alligator, and buffalo beef jerky.
That's good stuff, man.
We're going to have to try that.
Lean, too.
And then Christine Peterson from the UK, Patreon. I remember that name from last week. She sent us a whole box of this People's Choice small batch jerky that's handmade in Los Angeles, California.
I like to see the hands that make it.
Well, I'm sure they've washed and are wearing gloves. I feel pretty comfortable.
It's not going to stop us anyway.
We need a beef jerky sponsor. That's for sure.
We do need a, you know, if you work for a beef jerky company and you want to advertise,
hit us up.
Hit us up.
And then Mitch Lonis, right? I talked about him and his wife signing him up for Patreon. He actually sent in a Harley chip from up in Nova Scotia.
Really?
Yep.
Well, that's cool. Thank all of you.
Yeah, appreciate that. Appreciate all that. All right, Gibbs, wrapping up the show, let's just say again, we want to wish everybody happy holidays.
Absolutely.
All of that. And, you know, there'll be an episode out next week, but we're taking the week off and we'll be back with a brand new episode in 2 weeks.
Yeah. So just enjoy the holidays, no matter what you're doing. If you're by yourself, like I said earlier, binge something on TV or binge a podcast. And everything will be just fine.
All right. So that is it for another episode of True Crime All the Time. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking. I want to tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. You know, primarily, Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least two dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area, and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels, and with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up, and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download, and you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS.